Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You, Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Walnut Creek, California. Today is Thursday, June 20th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 34, the third paragraph. It's actually the last paragraph on that page. How then shall we help? Goes to the top of page 35, and we'll comment on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Amy L.P., the 12 Traditions, Dion R., and the readers of the text are Mary H. and Mary Jane Z. The share ID for yesterday, Wednesday, June 19th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 13,056. That's 13056. And the share ID for this morning's meeting is 13,059. That's 13059. Newcomer greeter is Ramona A., and the announcements coordinator is Janice P.M. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Amy L.P. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Amy L.P., recovering compulsive eater from Arkansas. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive eaters, overeaters, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Amy L.P., and I will now ask Dion R. to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, and good morning, Mo. My name is Dion R. Excuse me, a recovered compulsive overeater just for today. I'm very grateful. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group are never endorsed, financed, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems with money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contribution. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such are never be recognized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Dion R. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. And that's not the mute button on your phone, that is star 1. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speaker's, should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 34, the third and last paragraph on that page. How then shall we help? Comments will be on that one paragraph only, and I will now ask Mary H. to get us started. Good morning, Mary. Mary, press star 1. You know what? I don't think Mary checked in. Is someone willing to read that for me?
You can go ahead and have Mary Jane Z do that for you.
Okay. Mary Jane, will you step up and do the reading? Sorry about that. I missed that person.
Well, I would, but I stepped away from my book, so it's going to be, it would be a minute, so.
I can jump in.
I'll wait.
Okay, I could read it.
Who is this?
Oh, this is B.
B, Beatrice O?
Yes.
Go ahead, Beatrice. Thank you.
This is Beatrice O from the Bay Area. Page 34, last paragraph. How then shall we help other readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to the alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking. For obviously, this is the crux of the problem. So some of the mental states that precede a relapse are, how did I do this again? Well, for me, how did I do this again? And then the self-hate that automatically comes from binging and overeating, the sloth, the depression. And then after a few days, then it's like you forget. You forget that you compulsively overate. That feeling is drifts away until the next time, and I would tell myself, I'm going to do better next time. You know, I just really can't have that food. And then I would tell myself, oh, I'm doing really good now. I'm abstinent. I got 3 days. I got 4 days, 5 days. And all of a sudden, something happens, or I'm in fear, or I get in an argument. I'm thinking of a resentment I have. It could be anything. It could be, and as the disease progresses, it's really not an argument. It does, you know, it's raining. It's, you know, there is no more excuses by the time you get, if you're a real food addict and you've crossed that line, that like, it's like the sliding glass doors open up and you're walking into that second phase of addiction where you don't have any more excuses of why you ate. You just don't know why. And then after you finish another binge, you tell yourself it wasn't that bad. And before you know it, you've gained 60 pounds and you can't figure out how you gained all this weight. It's not like a denial. It goes deeper than that. It's like for me, it was like I wasn't conscious of my reality. I was checked out. I mean, I was managing my life. I was taking care of business. But what with regard to food, the gaining and losing weight and the binging and the purging and the laxatives.
Fine.
I was just a mentally obsessed person, obsessed with the food that dominated my life. Thank you. And with that, I'll pass.
Hey, thank you, Beatrice O, for stepping in there. Really appreciate that. I will now remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 34, the third and last paragraph. How then shall we help? That comments on that one paragraph only. And I will now open the lines up for those who'd like
Deanna R.
I got Deanna R. Who was after her?
Jana M.
Jason?
Ross G.
Did I hear Jason? Nope.
Jana.
Bruce.
Jana M.
Jana. Thank you, Jana.
Yeah. Lori Louise
what's
H.
What's your last initial? Okay, Lori Louise. I got you, Lori. I got Roz G.
Cindy D.
Cindy D.
Donna B.
Donna B. I got C. Bruce, I'll put you in the next one, okay? Donna
Thank
B.
You.
Cindy D. Lori Louise, Roz G. Okay, I did it. This Roz G. What? Okay, I've got Dion R. Jana, I didn't get your last initial. Lori Louise, I didn't get your last initial. Roz G. Cindy D. And Donna B. And then Bruce, I'm going to put you for the first one in the next group. Bruce E. All right. Dion R., you're on, followed by Jana.
Yes, hi, this is Dion R. Okay. Recovered compulsive overeater. The part that stuck out for me today was a couple of things. It says, This experiment of quitting for a period of time would be helpful. But we think we can render. To me, that means give, as the Big Book Dictionary says, for me, is to give or make available an even greater service for the compulsive overeaters, sufferers, and perhaps the medical fraternity, which is very important to me and my recovery, is that part right there. Not only are we the first 100, we're helping the alcoholics find out if they were powerless, if they were desperate, any of those things. We were also able to help the medical fraternity. For me, when I work with others, the best way I can help them in that particular render or give advice is, I like they say, a sponsor is a guide. I shine my light, you know. But if someone says, well, I don't know if I really am, I love that experiment. I mean, the fact that they talk about the experiment of stepping into his food bar, you know, or wherever, and see if you can stop or eat your binge food and moderate, you know, and stop on your own. You know, you may just be a heavy eater, or as they used to call it, a foodie or something. You know, I was explaining to my son last night, there's a big difference between a foodie and a compulsive overeater. Once I stepped over, crossed over, you know, a person that crossed over, I'll know. because I'll be crying help. You know, that person will be like, oh, and they soul and they gut, and my gut, you know, they'll know, this, I can't help myself. I cannot stop. I lied many years to many people, said, oh, I can do it. I can control it. No, that was the crux. I had to get sick and tired of being sick and tired, that old cliche, you know. And here it goes in the last part in this warning. So we shall describe the mental states that precedes a relapse during drinking. For me, that's that mindset, the crux of the problem. This is the most important part of the problem, is where's your mind at behind it, that time? What were you thinking? Why are you holding on to this resentment? You know, and why did you relapse? Because you stopped working the steps, you know. I learned that, you know, and I had to keep trying it Dion's way again until I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. It's like nobody could tell me the fire is hot. I know. You know, nobody could tell you water would cool me off. I knew, you know, to my utmost being. And with that, once a compulsive overeater knows that, hey, it is what it is. If that makes sense, guys, then I'll pass with that. Thanks for allowing me to share this morning.
Thank you, Dion R. Jaina, your first initial, followed by Lori Louise.
Good morning, visionaries. This is Jaina M. as in Mary, a compulsive overeater in Phoenix, Arizona. And can I be heard?
Yeah, you were bleeping in and out a little bit, but I can hear you now.
Okay, great. Yeah, this is Jaina M. in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm a compulsive overeater. And how do I know that I'm one of us? Is it, you know, because I've gained and lost 80 to 100 pounds 3-4 times in my life? Sure. Is it because I would drive through multiple drive-thrus, even after I started going to OA meetings, and get a huge order and hide it in the back seat so that the person at the second drive-thru didn't see that I had already gone through a drive-thru? And same with the third and the fourth drive-thru, where I would sit in the dark parking lot, I would search for the darkest spot, make sure it was not under a light, eat, and then make sure that I threw everything away in the dumpster before I went home. Sure, that's part of how I know I'm a compulsive overeater. Is it the fact that no matter how many times I've gone through the cycle of gain and loss and self-loathing and self-hatred, resulting ultimately in, like, you know, suicidal depression and multiple anxiety attacks per day, is it despite the fact that despite all of that, the food still will sometimes call my name and sound like an option, no matter how many times I've been burned by the fire? Yeah, all of those things let me know that I am one of us. And, you know, another thing that lets me know that I am one of us, the fact that when I get in this big book and when I work the steps as they are outlined, I recover. I get peace. I get my sanity back. I get my life back. When I work this it works. It works to the extent that I work it every single time, just like the food took me down every single time. The program lifts me up every single time. I don't think it would work if I wasn't one of us. So the fact that my life was totally unmanageable before, and the fact that I have recovery now, those things let me know that I'm one of us and that this works if you work it. So newcomers, just keep coming back because there is a solution here. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Jana M. Lori Louise, you're on, followed by Roz G.
Hi, this is Lori Louise H. Thank you for your service, Mo. Yeah, thank you, Mo, for your service. And thank you, everybody on the call. I really need these calls. I started listening to this call on the 3rd, so not quite 3 weeks ago. And with God's grace and help, today will be my 21st day of abstinence. I've been in program since 2000, and the first couple of years, I was abstinent with a sponsor that I was willing. I was surrendered. I was desperate. And then for the last, 16 years, I have been a chronic relapser. And I haven't had the 20 days of continuous abstinence that I have right now in years. I literally can't even remember the last time that I had 20 days. So now I am in this paragraph, the mental states that precede the relapse. That's where I am right now. I'm working with a sponsor in this version of this vision version of the program, and I'm on step one right now. We worked step one last night. I'm working toward reading the information to do steps two and three. But what jumped out at me in the step one reading has to do with this mental state that I think I was never able to actually see before. And I heard, I've heard so much of value in these calls, but I'm going to go back to on page 23, there was that thing, there was the obsession that somehow someday they will beat the game. And I guess I was still there. I heard somebody several days ago say something that she had admitted to her addict self that she was powerless, but not to her innermost self. And that has really stuck with me. I'm in that spot where I just forget. I've got food amnesia. I can't bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the memory of suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. And that's this mental state that precedes my ongoing relapse. So I am recovering now and so grateful for everybody who's on these calls. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Lori Louise, and welcome to our phone meeting. Let me see. Roz G., followed by Cindy D. Good morning, Roz.
Good morning. This is Roz G. I'm out walking the dogs if you hear some background noise. Well, to me, this paragraph opens up the door of awareness. It's, you know, because I used to think that I was really weak. And people would say to me, you can do it. You can do it. And I remember sitting on my bed just with my head hung so low with my mom sitting there next to me giving me all this advice about, and with loving heart, about what I could do, you know, to stop. And I just couldn't understand. You know, why can't I do this diet? Why can't I stick with it? And it wasn't until I studied and it was brought to my attention that there are several different things that happen to me before I take the drink. I mean, excuse me, I eat the food. And I'm not aware of it. This says, okay, we're going to describe a few things to you. Oh, there's something that happens to me before I do it. There's thinking. I went to see my therapist yesterday. It was a very difficult session, and I was disturbed. But because I have awareness now, because I have a tool, and that's the 10th step, and a God squad, I'm able to make phone calls. But not just that, I have a higher power that I understand, that I trust, and that I can go to help dispel the thinking that precedes that very first bite. And, you know, the paragraphs ahead are going to tell us, give us some great examples of them. For me, this is awareness. And as I've been hearing in the shares, you know, in the earlier meeting, there's that mental blank spot that helps us to, that causes me to forget every time. And every morning, I have to ask God, plug in to the wall, plug into that power, because I'm going to wake up a pumpkin. But I have the power. I mean, I don't have the power. I'm able to reach out to the power that's greater than me to bring that awareness back and stay in fit spiritual condition in order to do that. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Roz G. Cindy D, followed by Donna B. Cindy, good morning.
Good morning, Mo. Nice to hear you, and thanks for your service. This is Cindy D, gratefully recovered in Texas. And, you know, I was thinking a lot about the word experiment, and I looked it up in the dictionary, and it says, you know, test under controlled conditions that's made to demonstrate a known truth or to determine efficacy of something previously untried. And it just kind of made me giggle because I think I really like experiments because I sure did a lot of them when it came to my eating. Experimented with every type of, you know, approach or new fad or new thing that was out there, and nothing worked. And I think even to some degree when I first came into program and first got recovered, that I still thought of it as an experiment because I had so little confidence that, you know, I could ever, you know, stay on any type of program for a period of time. And, you know, it was only when I could really let it go into my soul that this is a way of life and it's not about me, it's about a connection with my higher power, that I got past that idea of this being an experiment and truly being the way that I'm going to choose to live my life. And then it makes me, you know, kind of smile when I read, you know, whether they are one of us. And I just love that inclusion, and I can't, you know, even express how it feels to finally feel like I'm part of a group of people who understand me and get me and I can feel part of. And doesn't mean I don't still sometimes, you know, get into my pity party and compare myself and feel like I come up short. But for the most part, you know, every time I pick up the phone and I talk to a fellow, new or recovered, you know, I can identify with them and I can relate and I can feel it in my heart and in my soul. And it really helps me to stay focused because I too have those mental blank spots all the time. You know, when I'm upset, you know, I'll find myself standing in front of the refrigerator and I'll be like, what am I doing? And, you know, go back to God and say, God, you know, be with me right now. I'm in a weak moment. I will be done. And so I know that for me, I am truly a compulsive overeater. And I was talking to a fellow yesterday or the day before, and we were talking about other, you know, food programs that maybe don't agree with the allergy part of our disease. And, you know, I just said, you know, it is not worth the experiment to me any longer. I know for me, I cannot pick up certain foods. I must remain abstinent or I lose my contact with my higher power. And that peace and serenity that my higher power gives me every day is so much better than any bite of food I would ever or ever have taken. And so for me, the experiment is over. I have a way of life and I am going to work my program every day so I can maintain my peace and serenity. With that, I'll pass. I'll give it back to you, Mo. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Cindy D. Before I take Donna B., I'm just going to remind everybody where we are on page 34, the last paragraph, third paragraph. How then shall we help? And comments on that one paragraph. And after Donna, I will take some more names. Donna B., you're on.
Hello, this is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater, calling from Denver, Colorado. Thank you, everyone, for your service and for all the shares. I've really enjoyed. It is my opinion that the Big Book goes to great lengths to help each individual determine if, in fact, we are, whether this is one of us. So for me, the exercise of determining if I am a real compulsive overeater is a really important process to go through so that I can identify in to the degree that I really understand that this is about life and death. Over the past couple of weeks, I've had the opportunity to speak to a number of new prospects, and when I talk to them about how I sponsor, what my expectations are, what the assignments are, how we will move forward working together, it's a big responsibility. It's a big chunk of like, oh my God, I really have to do all of that to be well. And I think this determining to my own personal satisfaction that I really am a real compulsive overeater is the only way that I was able to be in a position where when my sponsor said, you need to do A, B, C, and X, Y, and Z, there was no hesitation or reservation on my part to do exactly what she asked me to do, because I was able to understand that I really am a real compulsive overeater. And in that understanding, accepting that my own thinking is unreliable. And for me, that is still a terrifying premise to accept as a person who grew up in a very dysfunctional home and became an adult at a very young age. I believed my thinking was my best, most important resource to navigate through difficult situations, and that my mind, my thinking, was what was keeping me safe and alive. And to come into a program which puts that all on its head, that says to me, well, we've got some good news and some bad news. The bad news is you cannot rely on your own thinking at all. And the good news is that there is a higher power that I can turn to over
time
and over again to direct my thinking. Thank you. And with that, I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Donna B. I'll now open the lines up for more who'd like to share. I have Bruce E. as number one. Anyone else?
Electra S.
Patty T.
Lisa H.
Patty T. Who was after Patty T?
Lisa H.
Lisa H. Oh, got you, Lisa. Okay.
Jean J.
Jean J.
Sherry KB.
I got you, Sherry. Okay, we'll stop there. All right, we got... Okay, we got Bruce E., I've got Electra F., Patty T., Lisa H., Jean J., and Sherry KB. All right, that's a good lineup. Bruce E., followed by Electra S.
Hi, I'm Bruce E. I'm recovered in Florida now. And thank you, everybody that's serving. Thank you, everybody on the line, everybody that's shared. Determined to their own satisfaction whether they're one of us. Well, I guess what determined it was that I couldn't stop on my own. You know, I mean, I got a desire to be abstinent. Yeah, I got that. I had that, probably, maybe. But couldn't do it myself on my own unaided human will. And I couldn't do it on my human will. I tried all that. I had a higher power, but the application of that higher power was very difficult for me. I had a kind of a messed up thought process maybe on that. The mental states that precede a relapse, well, what are they for me? The buildup of emotions, definitely. Excuse me. So what do I do about these buildup of emotions? It seems like they come every day. I can't go a day without some buildup of some emotion. And so I've got a 10th step, right? I do a fourth and fifth with sponsor, which I'm grateful for. And then I do a 10th step. So that relieves the buildup of mental emotions, because if I get resentful or fearful, then I can, which usually is what happens when I have these buildup of emotions, and I can share that with somebody, and that seems to take it away. The stress of life, yeah, that adds in there. And the my character defect, well, the ego, you know, and then we go back to some of those others, the fear and the resentment. The mental state, well, what about when things don't go my way? You know, I want to play God, right? And stuff doesn't go my way. And then I get upset. And that builds up those emotions too. So it takes prayer, and I just discovered from, I knew parts of this before, but from listening to Sunday edition from a couple of weeks ago, what I tried this morning was the third step on my knees, the third step prayer, then the seventh step prayer, then the 11th step prayer from, I think it's page 98, and the 12 and 12, AA 12 and 12, and then 2 or 3, 4 minutes of meditation, which I really have not been good at. Thank you. And that seems to help too with this whole thing. So I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Bruce E., Electra S., followed by Patty P. Electra.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service, Team Thursday. Electra S., recovered compulsive overeater, bulimic in Santa Cruz, California. And what a beautiful paragraph, and what incredible shares this morning. So thank you all who have shared about so many things that I feel that relapse. Relapse is really scary, and it's very real. And in thinking about this paragraph this morning and what I've been through since recovery, and so many of us, is that it's almost a necessity. You know, blank spots are so paramount, and it's amnesia, and it's forgetting about how terrible this disease is when you're in it, in the crux of it, and how cunning and baffling in those words, just being so clear of how horrific the isolation is and how quickly you can go down that path into depression, isolation, and removal from service. And my God, at least, put me here to do service, to help others. Whether another suffering in this disease or another, it's for service. And I know through my fellows and through sponsors and sponsorship that the only way out of this disease is to serve another. And I was taking some notes this morning, listening to some other shares on the 7 a.m. That resonated with me so much, if you're a newcomer, but knowing that what all I want every day right now in the here is I just want out. I want freedom from this disease. And until I could surrender, until I could be willing to find a power greater than myself to be able to fall on my knees, to be able to reach out to my fellows and ask for help and share my story and share my, not just my strength and my recovery, but also my lows and the days that were hard and the moments that were in relapse so that I could identify myself as a true compulsive overeater. That was never hard for me to identify. What was hard for me to identify was I couldn't do this by myself. And the hardest thing for me to identify in this program was that self-will, page 60 to 63, that self-will was never going to be able to release me, that a power greater than myself and that a phone line for like vision could cure me of this really terrible disease that also brought me amongst so many of my fellows. So for you newcomers out there wanting something so bad, that's the start. But wanting to go to any length, that's the way you find the solution to a spiritual recovery. Thank you, Mo, and I pass.
Yeah, thank you, Electra S. Patty T, followed by Lisa H. Patty.
Hi, thank you so much for your service, Mo, and thanks, everybody. This is Patty T, from Recovered Today from Southern California, and I'm just so grateful to be one of us. I have lived most of my life isolated, whether out of fear or ego, which is usually out of fear. They're about to show us some more examples of the mental state that precedes a relapse into drinking, or in our case, eating. And I can tell you that this whole last year of recovery on this line has been my discovery about my thinking. While I could maybe, accept that there were foods that triggered me and that, whatever, I wasn't willing to concede to my innermost self or to anything, any other degree, that it was my thinking actually that was the crux of this problem. The fact of the matter is, it is my thinking. And I can tell you from my own experience of 6 years in chronic relapse that the first thing that happens is when I begin to think I did this, I can do this, look at what I did, right? And usually that's about the weight loss, right? But then, of course, it goes right into everything else. So what I have to do today that I've learned on this phone line is to get up every morning and say that first step. I am powerless over food. And my life is unmanageable. Like, it just is. I don't manage my life. I have a higher power that does that. I can't manage my life. I never have for the entirety of my, 60, almost 64 years. And so I say that. And then, over on page 80, I think it's 86, I do that. I read on Awakening, and I ask God to direct my thinking, and especially asking that I be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives, because that self-centered thinking of mine is the crux of my problem. Other thinking is what I'm discovering here, and that is what will protect me. Thanks for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Patty T. So we have three people left who'd like to share in about 6 minutes. So if you each would take 2 minutes, that would be great, and we get everybody in. So Lisa H., followed by Jean J. Lisa H.
Hi, this is Lisa H. Can you hear me?
Yep, gotcha.
Okay. Thank you. I'll try to keep it short. I really have enjoyed everybody's shares this morning, and even sometimes I get on the phone line and I think, I've got something else I could listen to, and I just say, hang in there and keep listening, and because I'm sure there's things that need to be heard. And, I came to this program. I'm in another program, and I'm coming up on 6 years, and I came to this program maybe a year ago, probably started listening 6 months ago to this meeting, and really started working with a sponsor about 6 weeks ago. And, I started to ask myself whether I really had this, here I was trying to convince myself, maybe I don't have this problem as bad as I think, I had gastric bypass surgery, so I've gone as far as you can go to do that and lose the weight and everything. The restriction of that gastric bypass surgery means that I can't eat sleeves of cookies or any huge volumes of food without extreme pain or sickness. And so I wanted to say, well, I don't eat, you know, a whole box of cookies. I don't do this thing. But really, you know, what happened was yesterday I had something happen that caused me a bit of stress related to work with a client. And I was driving home past one McDonald's after another, and the obsession was just so great to pull in and relieve myself of my upsettedness that I really came to realize just what a crazy mental obsession it was to want to eat something from McDonald's, even if it was not even a great amount of food, to relieve me of this, what it was going on. And I heard a speaker not long after that in a podcast on from this group talk about, you know, it's not about the food. And the realization that it isn't about the food and it isn't about the amount of food. It isn't, you know, I mean, it's putting that all aside and realizing that I have a mental obsession. I truly do, which makes me one of us. And I think that, you know, my disease is back there working, like someone else was saying, and hearing someone say, I think I'm smart and I can figure this out. And I've been doing that for a lot of my life. So I am grateful for this meeting. I really do enjoy listening to everyone's shares. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lisa H. Jean J., followed by Sherry KB. Jean J.?
Thank you. This is Jean J. in Portland, Oregon. Two things struck me on this mental state that precedes the relapse and that is the crux of our issue. And the first one is fear, my good old pal fear, and all its attendants, impatience, and you name it, fill in the blank. So what do I do with this fear? Big Book graciously tells me. I ask my higher power, you know, what would you have me be instead of holding on to this fear? And then the answer there in 83 to 88 in that area is that my higher power would have me trust and relax. Yes. And that leads me to the second point is in my morning meditation just this morning, I noticed that I will tense up in my upper arms. I'll be tensing there. I'll be trying to drive. And in meditation is lovely because it gives me a chance to notice that. And then I can let go and kind of practice that in a few moments of my quiet time in the morning so that later on in the day, when the good old mental state starts to rear its head, I can remember to trust and relax and let go of that fear. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks very much, everybody.
Well, thank you, Jean J. And Sherry KB, we got time for you. 2 minutes.
All right. Thanks, Mo. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Thanks so much for your service, Mo, and Team Thursday and everybody on the line. Welcome, newcomers. You know, the crux is the main problem, what it says is the main problem of a compulsive overeater like me, is that it's in my mind. That's where it really, what really goes on. And the difference between knowing what I'm a compulsive overeater is that it reminds me of the doctor's opinion where it tells me I have a twofold illness, a mental obsession of the mind and a physical allergy of the body. And I can't remove that mental obsession. And my disease will try to convince me that I'm not a compulsive overeater, that I'm not like you, that I'm different, that I can have just one, or even though I haven't done it for years, now I can because I haven't had it in a long time. I mean, my disease will just go to town on doing anything to get me to convince me that I can do this. And honestly, a normal person wouldn't sit there and mow over in their mind constantly that they can do this or do that or I've got this. I have never talked to a normal person around eating that thinks and talks about it the way I have in the past. So that's that mental twist, the mental blank spot. It gangs up against the intellect and convinces it it'll be different this time, or I've got this thing. And I do know that for me, oh, Mo, I didn't time me. Please let me know
when
your time's up. Thank you. And I just know that my disease never takes a break, never takes a vacation. When I'm working with people, I always tell them, hey, call me on when you're on vacation, call me on the holidays, because my disease doesn't take a break. So I have to have my nose in this book all the time, because, and I have to be working with others, because I can't remove that mental obsession. Only God can. And for me, working the steps is the only way the mental obsession gets lifted, because I can, like somebody said on the line, I can be standing in front of the refrigerator for some reason. I don't know how I even got there, because that's that mental blank spot. And the mental twist will try to convince me that, you know, I've done so well for so long, and, you know, I can just have this, or I can do that. And without God, I couldn't do this. And I pass. Thanks, Mo.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you, Sherry KB. Thanks, everyone, for your shares this morning. Again, once again, a good meeting. And I want to thank all those who gave service, Amy LP, Dion R., Beatrice O., Mary Jane Z. Our newcomer greeter will be Ramona A., and announcements will be Janice PM. And so I will now ask Mary Jane Z. to close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, and we'll follow it with a serenity prayer. So, Mary Jane, will you please read A Vision for You?
Yes, I will. Good morning, everyone, from Kentucky, the great state of recovery, where we're blooming here. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of a happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.